Oh, I do?
All right, it's on.
Okay, we're getting real close. Okay, go ahead and turn your mics on.
They're on.
Oh, okay. Good evening. Welcome to the City of St. Mary's Planning Commission meeting, July 17th, 2018. It is 5:30. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Because we have a membership of four, having three this evening is a quorum. And we have Ms. Thompson and Mr. Sampson from the Community Development Department here, and City Attorney Gary Moore as well. So we're going to start with the agenda item of approval of minutes from the July 11th, 2018 Planning Commission meeting. Is there any discussion?
I might make a motion we table those. There's some corrections to make and we take them up again at the meeting Thursday night.
Is there a way that we can make corrections this evening?
I don't think we want to.
Okay, sure. Is there a second to table?
I'll second the table.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So the old business, we're going to look at a final plat reverse subdivision, Warren Bennett, 379 Meckle Place, St. Mary's. Could we have a staff report?
Yes, we do. Warren Bennett is requesting a reverse subdivision to combine two parcels to place an accessory structure of a storage barn on one. The two tax parcel numbers are 135N174-135094Q. I'm just going to briefly go through the presentation with you guys. These are the letters for and against. As you can see, we did not receive any letters for, but we did receive letters for and against, as highlighted on the map. The property is in PDR1. It does meet the requirements for the R1, minimum lot size of 10,000 square feet, lot width of 75, 25-foot front setback. The front setback would be considered wherever the front door is located, so it's going to be kind of a little strange on this particular property. It's an interior lot, so there will be 15-foot side setback, 15-foot rear, the lot coverage 30% in height. This is the plat. As you can see, you have a smaller parcel at the front where the residence is. It is joined by a 19-foot piece right here, and then it goes into the larger parcel. This is a map that we prepared for you that shows the floodplain and then the wetlands. And the red is actually from the legal description. The yellow is from the tax assessor, so it's a little off. The tax assessor says. These are the requirements as part of the subdivision that you guys can review in order to make your decision. Staff is abstaining from any recommendation for or against.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to recognize the applicant or representative of this application at this time.
Yes, Foster Lindberg. I represent Mr. Bennett, who's the applicant.
Do we need an address in this circumstance? Okay, if you could provide your address as well.
For Mr. Bennett.
For Mr. Bennett.
All right, well, it's 379 Mobile Place.
Okay, thanks.
Are you going to ask for a presentation at this time?
Yes, please.
All right. May I?
Yes, please.
Well, let me, ask how you do business here. What your ground rules are as far as how much time I have, how much time people have that may be speaking in opposition to the application.
Sure, thank you for saying that. We have a 5-minute time frame, and I have a timer up here as well.
All right. And is the applicant allowed a rebuttal?
That's a great question. Typically, my understanding is that it's each person gets a total of 5 minutes. So if there was time allowed that within the five?
I think the applicant gets more than 5 minutes than anybody else gets the 5 minutes. The mother gets the 5 minutes.
I'm deferring to you.
I don't know what you've been doing.
It's been a total of 5 minutes. But I've never had the applicant ask for more.
Well, the first question is about rebuttal. I think if they save some time, they can use some of that for rebuttal at the end. The question gets back to how much time they have, and I think that's an issue for y'all to decide.
Okay.
What you'd want to do is give both sides an equal amount of time.
Combined of public comment, combined time, is or 5 minute time?
As closely as you can. Okay. It's going to be hard to police public comment, but you want to try to do that.
I guess I need to rephrase my question. So are you talking about the 5 minutes, or if 25 people talk for 5 minutes, are you talking about that total of time?
Well, if you give the applicant, say, 10 minutes, mm-hmm. then the other side would have 10 minutes. You give them 30 minutes, then the other side would have 30 minutes, and that would include comments on both sides as closely as you can.
Okay.
It's going to be difficult, but that's the way we'll start out.
Okay. So is there any discussion of time that we'd like to provide for the applicant that may be different than the 5 minutes we've worked with previously?
I'd just like to give him the time to make a full presentation.
What would be your estimation of time to give a complete presentation?
Well, I could give you a 10-minute version, a 15-minute version, or a 20-minute version. And part of that, I think, would depend upon what you consider germane to the application. I mean, I've been through the packet thoroughly, and I've read the opposing comments, and I don't see any of them based upon the zoning laws that apply that govern your decision-making process. I see a lot of, you know, people making comments that don't have anything to do with the zoning regulations. So if I have to address those, and I'm prepared to address them one by one, I can do all that. And then that's the longer version of what my presentation would be. But I would like to keep things on key with what the zoning requirements are and with what the packet has indicated are the zoning concerns that the Planning Commission has. That's where I would like to focus my attention, and I think I could probably streamline the process if permitted to do that, and we don't get into all these extraneous other things that don't have anything to do with the zoning issues.
Thank you. So if we start with 10 and we decide after there's public comment that there was an unbalanced amount of time, could we then allow him additional time? Okay. I'd like to do that. I'd like to start with 10 minutes, and then if we get through public comment and it feels like there was an unbalanced amount of time, that we reserve the right to allow you additional comment.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, my name is Foster Lindbergh. I represent Warren Bennett, the applicant here, who, as you know, has made an application for reverse subdivision to combine two lots on Mogul Place. And having been through the packet that was prepared by the staff, it appears that when it comes to the criteria for making a decision, which is cited in the packet under section 86.4 of the code, which enumerates the different items, the only concern, there are seven of them that are enumerated, they're just up on the screen, and the only concern that was voiced had to do with establishing reasonable standards of design and procedures for subdivisions and re-subdivisions in order to further the orderly layout and use of land and insurance of proper legal descriptions and monumenting of subdivided land to provide adequate records for land titles. And then, based on that, what was cited as the concern was the double frontage lots under section 86-33 of the code. Double frontage lots, it says in the packet, double frontage lots shall only be permitted where it shall be found necessary to separate a development from major streets or to overcome specific disadvantages of topography and orientation. And the staff comment was that the proposed reverse subdivision would create frontage in three locations on a single street. And then if you go on, you can look at the definition of streets. There is no definition per se of double frontage lots in the code, but it always refers to streets. The staff's comment and concern had to do with double frontage on streets. We don't have a street. We have an easement. And it's an easement that's been long in existence. An easement is defined differently under the code than a street. And there's good reason for that. This muni code is used throughout the United States in various municipalities. And easements are considered different from streets because they have a more specific role, even when they have a broad use for the public. And the easement in this case has to do with access back to other lots in Mokel Place, none of which will be affected by what my client wants to do, which is re-subdivide these lots so that he can put up an accessory building, a very nice, tasteful accessory building on the property to store equipment that he has used previously to clear trees that were down from Hurricane Irma, which blocked the easement and affected other people in Mokel Place. So when we look at the zoning criteria, what has been said so far is that the only issue had to do with this reasonable standards issue, which was based upon double frontage lots, and that definition doesn't apply at all. And I think what's especially of concern to someone like my client, an applicant who's trying to follow the zoning laws, is that number 7, that is a very vague, general, almost like a collective catch-all type of category upon which a zoning application could be denied. So you have this vague category in number 7, but then you're relying on a very specific definition, at least the staff was, in voicing a concern under this number 7, dealing with double frontage lots, because it would be a double frontage lot based upon streets. And this is not a street. This is an access easement, and it's been in place ever since this development was established. So based upon the zoning code, based upon the staff's comments, what I would say, what I would urge, what I would insist on is that my client is in compliance with the zoning regulations that are applicable, and that the one objection that the staff had has been removed from consideration, or at least from application, because it does not apply when you're dealing with an easement, which again is defined differently under your code from the street. Double frontage lots only applies when there are streets, not an easement. And you can't now redefine those specific terms to try and gerrymand that provision into this very vague number 7 that's relied upon. So I would say that based upon the zoning laws, my client has complied. And we could get into other things about other issues. I'm glad to do that. I'm prepared to do that. I don't think we should. I don't know how much time I have left at this point, but when we're talking about the zoning laws, it's not a street, it's an easement, and there's a difference, and we can't now redefine things when we've got this criteria.
Sure, if you were asking, it's 5 minutes.
All right. So I hope that will clear up, you know, that issue, that the concern that the staff had. And I think that the other thing is, you know, as a practical matter, you have the plat in front of you, and I have it more or less memorized in my head. And, you know, you could, if my client was to, or someone else was to purchase this property, they could build a residence there. They could put an accessory building there on that property. There would be, if a residence was built there, there would be more traffic. My client, in fact, has made a very nice long access point. I've got photographs here if I could approach and show them to you. It may be helpful. That's
sure.
All right. And also you can see a fence that my client has put up as well. But you'll see an access, thank you, from the easement. This easement is owned, the underlying fee is owned by my client, is maintained by my client. And of course, it benefits all of Noble Place for ingress and egress.
Can you tell us what we're looking at here?
Yes, you're looking at, if you drive back on the easement, through Hidden Lakes where the sign is, you drive onto the easement, you'll see the fence that my client has put up. At one point, you will see like a long access chute, if you will. Have you seen that photograph yet? We'll provide access back there. So this is not a commercial enterprise. There's nothing, no business in the wings. It's just my clients.
I'm sorry, what are we looking at here?
Well, that's just from the forest. That's looking back on the lot there, and you can see how much vegetation there is there. And as a matter of fact, both the city and the EPD, Alice and Vic, with the EPD, have approved the reforestry process that my client is utilizing. It's best practices. It doesn't involve any burning. We have some trees that are down from the hurricane, so he's mulching with those, and we'll, based upon best practices, we'll grow citrus trees to replace the oaks that are falling, and that's what has been approved by EPD as well as the City of St. Mary's. I have those letters, if you would like to see those, letters and emails.
I'm not sure how that fits into the application.
Yeah, I think it's tangential as well, but it does perhaps address some of the concerns that have been raised on the side issues. So.
If these, I mean, we can accept them. It doesn't mean we can, yeah, sure, that's fine if you want to share them.
May I approach?
Yes, please.
There's a letter there, and then an email from Alice Vick that's attached. I would like to reserve whatever remaining time I have to respond, but would urge the commission to approve the application based upon the grounds I set forth.
Okay, thank
you.
Thank you
so much.
So we would accept public comment at this time. I ask that everybody keep their comments to, I think we're at the 5-minute mark per person. If you would state your name, come up to the podium, state your name and your address. Thank you.
My name is Terry Stover and I'm at 305 Meckle Place. And I got a couple of questions about streets and easements. In addressing addresses, and I don't know this, and this is something I want to try to clarify, in addressing addresses, that road or easement has been named Meckle Place for 25 years. So it's not just an unnamed easement. It has a name to it, and there's addresses all the way up and down. So my question is, how is it not considered a street? What is the difference if somebody lives on an easement or goes down an easement versus a street when they have addresses on it?
I'm not prepared to answer questions. I can't answer your question is what I'm saying. I wasn't prepared to answer that question. I don't know the
so
answer to
you
it.
You couldn't answer, or can I ask the city attorney question?
I don't think it's appropriate to answer questions. If you have a presentation to make in opposition, go ahead and make it, but it's not appropriate for us to have a dialogue.
Well, okay. Well, I developed Hidden Lakes Phase 1, 2, 3, and 4 over the last 25 years. And I lived in Hidden Lakes Phase 1, along with a good many of these people back here, for over 20 years. And we've always had a real nice subdivision back there. The houses now in the subdivisions range from probably $600 to $1 million. And so my objection to this would be the way everything, and you've got the letters, and you've read the letters from all the people, and you saw how many people were against it. So you know all the problems that we've had in the subdivision, and I'm not here to bash Mr. Bennett, okay? But we feel, and we're scared. The reason we're here is because of past performance of Mr. Bennett and his actions. We feel like, and if there's going to be some realtors here tonight, and I'm a builder and a developer. And I can tell you this, just from what's been done so far, it's a lot harder to take somebody down Meckle Place and sell a $600,000 house before Mr. Bennett moved in because of what he's done over there. So there's posted signs, there's surveillance signs, cameras, all this kind of stuff. And that doesn't help good when you're trying to sell a piece of real estate. So my opposition to this would be the devaluation of a lot of people's property. And under your 86-4 that the gentleman was talking about, one of the things it says, number four, the development, number five, protect, this is one of the things that the Planning Commission's job is to protect and conserve the value of land and buildings throughout the city while avoiding conflicts among the uses of lands and buildings. So my biggest issue here, the other thing is, whether you're aware of it or not, Mr. Bennett talked to me about a year ago, might have been a little over a year ago, and asked me that he thought he was going to go into some land clearing and stuff, and asked me about a Kubota tractor, and he was thinking about buying a Kubota tractor, and he also asked me if I would be willing to use him. Well, I had no quorums with Mr. Bennett a year and a half ago. So I said, sure. So the fact of the matter is, we know, because he wanted to go put a storage building over there to house his tractors, which probably would look better than what's there now, but the same fact is he can run a commercial business out of there. And once you give him that opportunity, what are you going to do to stop him? So he has commercially done things. You got a letter from my son and a check for $50 back when the hurricane, my son hired him to do some work in his yard. So we got a check up where it shows that we've been paid. He's already done something commercially. So I would ask that you not and deny it. Thank you.
Thank you. Your name and your address, please.
Thank you. Steve Hagee, 319 Local Place. I'm a managing broker for Central Properties in Kingsland, and I'm one of those people that bring customers to buy houses down Local Place. I brought somebody down the road seven days ago, and the first question out of the mouth coming down the street is, what's all this surveillance? Said that's fine, people can post things whatever they want to. Okay, we get to and he's putting up a nice fence. It truly is a nicely built fence. Wasn't painted yet. I don't think it was painted yet. Didn't have the copper on it. And he goes, what's all this? All right, what's the current owner is wanting to do something with the property. Do you know what he wants to do? I truly don't, because I don't. I don't know what's really going to happen. I know that there's going to be a barn based on tonight. So far we haven't seen a picture of it. But at 319 Mopole, I go out of my driveway and I see a barn. In all the recent talk on ordinance in St. Mary's of what we're going to do with our front yards, what can be in it. Because are we all going to be able to put barns in our front yards? Not a question. It's just, it's relevant in the city of St. Mary's on how we're going to go in the direction of how we're going to treat our properties. So, and that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else? Your name and address, please.
Okay. Jerry Krasnowski. I own a home at 551 Meckle. I just purchased the home for in excess of $650,000 from from out of state, plus I own another home in St. Mary. Through this whole process, the work was being done on that piece of property, and it's still being done. And I obviously have a significant investment in the neighborhood. I just put in an expensive dock and so forth and so on, which I'm making improvements in the house and whatever. I found nothing offensive about anything that's being done. From my point of view, I think the lot's going to end up looking better than it did before. So, I don't have any vested interest in any of this, other than I have to go by this property every day. And I look on the one side of the road where his house is, and the yard is beautiful and it's well maintained and so forth. I see that he's got equipment, and if it was my equipment and it was brand new equipment and so forth, I'd want to put it in some kind of a garage or something also to protect it with the salt water and so forth. I'm a little concerned that maybe I made a mistake buying this piece of property and this home for what I paid for it, and I'm not going to be able to use my property because I also have a tractor, okay? And I use that tractor to keep Meckle Place open, okay? Am I going to get thrown out too? I mean, it really is kind of offensive to me that we're not dealing with laws and zoning and this and that and the other thing. We're dealing with people's opinion that don't want anything to change. I just don't think that's a very realistic approach. Like I said, I have my money 100% invested in St. Mary's, okay? So I do have a significant vested interest, okay, in what's going on. And I think that developing the properties, I mean, we're talking, last week I was here and we were talking about putting six houses on a 1 acre lot kind of thing, 800 square foot houses. I find that a lot more offensive than using whatever, how many acres this piece of property is, and putting up probably a very nice storage facility that's going to look more like a house than it is a barn. From what I see from his house and his yard and so forth, I would assume that's what he's going to do. And if it isn't something that's applicable to the neighborhood, if it's when it does come before the council, before the planning board, to approve this barn or storage facility or whatever, I mean, that's the time to do something about it, not just say, well, we think that somebody might build something. I also want to put up some kind of a facility. We got all kinds of rules coming up with the zoning ordinances and so forth coming up also about boats and cars. And well, I have four cars, two antiques and two current cars. I have $100,000 RV. I have a $200,000 boat in my backyard. I have another two smaller boats that are both well kept and well maintained. Where am I going to put them? Am I going to be able to put up a storage facility on my property? Okay.
Can I clarify, are you for the proposal then? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm certainly not against it.
Okay, thank you for. I just wanted to make sure understood.
You didn't directly
say it. You talked about.
I definitely don't see any reason for a person not to be able to use his property, a valuable piece of property at that. And if it was me, I'm an ex-builder also. I'd be putting up a house in a barn on it, which is totally legitimate. Okay. I wouldn't just put up a storage facility, but that's up to him. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Philip Jones, 201 Catherine Street. I read the packet for this meeting, and I guess this property used to be in an HOA, and then he opted out of the HOA. So, I'm a property rights guy. He's paying his taxes. He's doing everything lawful, or as far as I can tell, to get permission from the city to use this property with all the, within all the codes and standards. And I don't see how a community with an HOA can, impose their will on a private property, piece of private property, on a person outside the HOA. And am I not correct on that? I mean, as far as he is outside the HOA. And if he was in the HOA, I'd have a different opinion on it, because he would have, voluntarily agreed to go within the, covenants and restrictions of the community. But I think the city is compelled to approve it based on the fact that he meets all the, legal requirements. And if the people in the adjoining subdivision want to exert force, control on their neighbors, there's a couple of gated communities they can move into here, Osprey Cove and Cumberland Harbor. That's behind a fence, and they tell you exactly what you can do and can't do with your property and where you can park your car. And, it's just an overreach of the community, on personal private property owners. And I would encourage the Planning Commission to approve it. Thank you.
Before you walk away, I just want to clarify, because you didn't directly state it, you're for the request.
I'm for the request, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Come on up. Just let me know your name and your address.
Yeah, my name is Jim Greer. I've lived out at Meckle Place for 22 years. It probably was one of the prettiest places I've ever driven down to when I first went there. And it's changed a lot in the last 5 years. One of the things that really concerns me is that we're not dealing with homeowners' rules anymore. We're dealing with city ordinances. We live in the city. We have a neighbor that is pretty well content on just piling stuff and piling stuff and piling stuff. I think it's unsightly. I think it does not gain any value to the attractiveness of our subdivision. Also, that there is an issue with how this property is going to be used. I can't imagine somebody buying all that land clearing equipment and then not ever using it. I expect to be, when this is passed, I expect to be hearing backup alarms at 7:30 in the morning, tractors and skin steers and stump grinders, and he's got an arsenal of things to do a great business with. And I have no problem with doing a great business, but take it someplace where it belongs. We live in the city. The city says you should not use property that is considered to be residential for a business.
Can I just have you clarify that you are against the proposal? Okay, not to be dense, I'm hearing what people are saying, but I'd like for it to understand exactly what the position is when folks come up.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Robert Rucker, 10 Deerwood Court, St. Mary's. I stand in opposition to the proposal. The property in question is directly opposite my home in Hidden Lake. It would be a front door view of what is apparently going to be not residential in a residential community. There is no property in Hidden Lake, in any of the phases of Hidden Lake, that is not a residential home. This is not Mr. Bennett's proposal. I urge you to deny the application. Thank you.
Thank you. So I've been roughly tracking time, and it looks like there's a little bit of time if you'd like a rebuttal, if there's no further public comment.
Yes, thank you.
So it would be 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. Well, I think that what you see here is that you've got folks that are still part of an HOA that my client is not a part of, and they want to enforce the covenants and restrictions of the HOA on my client. He opted out when the covenants and restrictions sunset years ago, and that was his legal right. I've been to the property. I've been back down those streets, and my client's property holds its own as far as its appearance against any of the properties in there. In fact, it looks better than some of them back there. And I would also say that when people talk about this being a commercial business, that's just not intellectually honest. When Mr. Stover was paid $50 because his neighbor did a neighborly thing for him to help clear debris that he had, and then asked him how much it would cost to reimburse him for gas, what $50 do, that's not really honest to come in here and then say he's running a business. It's zoned R1. My client is not going to run a business. He can't run a business there. He can't run a commercial business there. It's a residential zoning. He has no intent to operate a business. And when it comes to the zoning laws, as I know Mr. Moore is well aware, and probably all of you all are as well, the zoning regulations do contemplate accessory buildings, and that's the purpose of the re-subdivision, so that he could have an accessory building that goes with the property, the house that he already has, which is a very nice home. He has the same investment concern that everybody else back there has. And I've been to his home, I've been in the front, I've been in the back. It's a beautiful home, it's a beautiful piece of property. Now, this easement is the same whether there's an accessory building there or not. And that's not gonna, it's not gonna be adversely impacted or affected. And that's the issue really when it comes to the zoning as I see it. Someone could build a home there and then build an accessory building, then you'd have more buildings on that lot. But some of those pictures show just how wooded, how much vegetation there is there. So it's not like when you're thinking, it is in the city limits, no doubt about that, and the city code applies. But it's not like you're dealing with sidewalks and buildings without trees and vegetation and what is out there. And I agree, it makes all that property out there very attractive. I think it's very beautiful. And I don't think that what my client is doing will negatively impact the value of the property at all. As far as surveillance, other people have surveillance cameras going 24/7 out there, and that's their right as well. So again, I think when you look at this being an easement and not a street, the double frontage lot concern goes away. I think that the access is the same. That lot that is in question, that is before you now, is there already. It's been there. It's been platted like that. The easement's there. It's been used for years and years and years. None of that is changing. And what my client intends to do is build a very attractive barn that will be fitting, and it will be in keeping with the surroundings, and will be an enhancement to the value of his property and to anyone else's in the area. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to close public comment at this time so we can discuss it as a board.
I move to close public comment.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Skip.
I've got some questions.
For the community
for the business and then.
Should that have happened during public comment or can that happen now?
No, you can ask.
Okay, sorry. That's why he's here. Go ahead, Wiley.
I got a couple of big items. I haven't been on the property. I've been by the property a couple of times. Very recently, I've been by the property several times in the past. This past Sunday, I took two rides out there. One Sunday morning, one Sunday afternoon. And I noticed a ramp there. And I've got it in a packet here, power to lot and water, signed by Mr. Bennett, approved by Robbie Horton and Jerry Sizemore. Well, I've questioned both of these about this, because I'm very familiar with electrical code. Neither one of them admits to me that they approved it. Matter of fact, they told Mr. Bennett to get an electrical permit and they would come and review it. And they haven't been back out there where he just had extension cords laid across the easement, which is not permitted by code. By electrical code, you're not supposed to run electric wire from one lot to another lot being serviced by the number one lot. And when you do run a line through there, it needs to be 3 feet deep, not on top of the easement. Telephone lines and cable lines are 2 feet deep. So that's what, they haven't been back to give them approval of anything. That's one item. Another item, as you were just in talking and you calling an easement, and you made the statement that you've been up and down the streets back there, reviewing the property, how pretty it is. Now, is it an easement, is it a street? And this is from your terminology, not from anybody else's.
I'd be glad to respond to that. If I may, my client has advised me there's no extension cord out there. I don't know what you're talking about with an extension cord. I'm not sure what you're talking about with that.
Some complaints came, and I did my investigation through the city about him running a wire across the easement to service this lot. Mr. Sizemore went out there as an inspector and looked at it. It was extension cords running to get electricity to the so-called lot. He told him it couldn't be extension cords. Mr. Horton went out and looked at it too. I talked to both of them. One's the fire chief, one's the building inspector here. And both of them told me, and I've talked to them two different times, and not together. So they couldn't talk to me, knowing I talked with the other one. Both of them, Mr. Sizemore told me and assured me that he told Mr. Bennett he couldn't run extension cords across there. And that before he did anything, for he'd get approval, he'd have to get an electrical permit, which is required. Now, a lot of people don't know this. This is something else I know. If a permit's required for something, electrical, plumbing, building, and you add on to it, or do the electrical, and don't get a permit and don't get it inspected like it should be, if a fire happens to result from that, your homeowner's insurance won't pay for it.
Yeah, all I can say.
So I'm just.
No, I understand your concerns, Mr. King. What I would say is that there's no extension. There's no extension cord out there.
No, it's a wire going across the road now to get electricity to that lot, isn't it? He's got a map over that wire.
There's a wire, but the agreement was that it would not be connected, and there would be an electrician. If it was going to be connected, you can go out there tomorrow morning and it's going to be untouched and sits there with two bitter ends because I've been using a generator over in the lot.
And so what the way we understand how the process would work is upon approval of the application, then you would apply for the electrical when you go about seeking approval for the structure. So that would be the natural order of things. As far as my terminology, I don't remember all the comments I made. I can certainly tell you that the plat that is the public record shows that as an easement. It is an easement. My client owns the fee. It's within the boundaries of his property. It is not a street. An easement under your zoning ordinance says a grant by the property owner to any person.
I'm going to ask what you stated. I know what the plat says, and I'm fully aware of it.
Well, if I misspoke, I apologize. You know, got me if I misspoke. But I will tell you, what it is a matter of law, regardless of what Foster Lindbergh says, is as indicated in that plat and as indicated in your zoning ordinance. And it's a easement, not a street.
I know it's an easement.
Thank you so much, though. Anything else? I'm glad to.
Did you have any more questions for him? Why is that?
That's good.
Okay.
I did bring Mr. Sampson with me tonight if you have any questions for him, because he was out of the property on several occasions. So if you have any additional questions.
Thank you. He has some questions.
I have a question for you. when Mr. Bennett originally purchased the property, was he aware that there were HOA covenants specific to the property at time of purchase?
When he purchased the property, the HOA had sunset. It was no longer, the covenants were no longer applicable.
So he was aware at time of purchase that it had been under covenants in the community, or were you under the covenants and then opted out of the covenants after purchase of the property? I'm trying to get the timing of when that occurred.
Yeah, go ahead.
When the covenants expired, following the expiration of the covenants, and through Stephen Kenny, the HOA's attorney, we chose to opt out. Following opting out, after the HOA was reestablished, so it went from 5 to 4 owners, and then we bought the property in about three years ago across the street. It was never in an HOA.
So, but when you were looking at the property, and I'm confused on the timeline, you had Stephen Kinney redraft the HOA. Were you owners of the property at the time of that drafting?
We're talking two separate properties. When we purchased our home,
yes,
the HOA was not in existence because it had sunset. So we purchased the home with the knowledge that there had been an HOA there.
Okay, that's what I wanted to tell
you. Now, we did not own the land across the easement at that time. That land was purchased later. So that was never in an HOA.
Yeah. And in terms of reverse, I'm familiar with reverse subdivisions. I do them in my job. The first thing I look at in a reverse subdivision request is there an easement between the two subject properties? And as a rule, the properties are far more contiguous than these properties are here. There is an easement easement is a street. You can call it whatever you want, but if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck. You know, it's a street. So we have to be, and you yourself, when you went to egress the property, as Wiley mentioned, called it a street. So I'm not in favor of a reverse subdivision that crosses the easement to a publicly recorded, deed-protected easement in a community. That to me is not an applicable reverse subdivision.
All right, well, so I guess if I understand you for the record, you're not basing it on the double frontage lots issue?
Well, the fact that it is, in my definition, the public's definition, that easement is indeed a street, that would create an issue with double frontage lots. But also looking at number 7, I don't see this as continuing and furthering an orderly layout and use of land. So that I have an issue from that point of view.
But it would be okay if a house was built on that lot?
If a house and a accessory accessory building was on that, I would have no pushback on that. I could not have pushback on
that. And what would be the difference in your mind and usage too?
I'm not sure the dialogue.
I'm just
that I'd like to continue the dialogue.
Right. Well, no, I understand. The definition, it is an easement. It's not a street. And I guess I beat that horse.
Okay.
But thank you so much for hearing us.
So I'd like to, if the questions for him are done, I'd like to just go over for the record, Mr. Lindbergh, you had mentioned number 7 in the double frontage, but in my research that I've done leading up, because it was a pretty comprehensive packet that we received to consider, was that I'm actually looking at 5, 6, and 7 as having negative impacts on those standards as outlined in the 1 through 8. And that's because a reverse subdivision like this is not logical and creates a non-conforming land use. That's my main concern, is that we would be creating something non-conforming from the start in an established R1 neighborhood. And R1, as we know, this is where this is located, is one of the most protected residential areas. And it's protected from encroachment of uses inappropriate to a single family home environment. And we heard from Mr. Rucker about his concerns, which I think are reasonable concerns, and Mr. Stover as well, just to name a couple that happened tonight. But the Planning Commission requests typically for an R1 to join two lots is to have an opportunity for a larger home to be built within the standards. This is not a situated two lots that could be put together to build any structure based on the very minimal connectivity or set. It doesn't have, even within the connection, enough for the minimum setback for this area. Even so, if the 20 feet or not even 20 feet that we heard, I think 19 feet where it legally meets.
I think it's 19.8.
Yeah, even if that's meets the legal requirements for a reverse subdivision, I do believe, I agree with, that the easement takes away the ability to create a clear connection between the two lots. And this layout creates the potential for an accessory structure to be built facing across the street, facing the primary residence, which we heard from, I think Mr. Haig had mentioned about a barns and front yards. And that was my concern as well. And I do see that the disorderly layout of the land is inconsistent with the neighborhood that's established all around it and creates a legitimate concern for the decrease of land values, which is number 5. Number 6 is the transportation piece of it. And I mentioned it, the street access being, according to zoning for subdivision, street access is supposed to be a minimum of 25 feet. If you look at the connection area, which is the reasonable transportation from the primary lot or the primary structure to the accessory lot, doesn't meet the minimum for street access at 25 feet or the setbacks of 15 feet on either side for a side setback. So that's why I also include number 6 in my assessment of this. I think that's all I have. Okay. Any more comment? I would accept a motion to...
I'll make the motion when you deny the subdivision, reverse subdivision.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so next on our agenda, buried it in paper, I apologize. We're going to look at a variance request, Gary Strait, on behalf of Ross and Susan Henderson. Could we have a staff report?
Gary Strait is representing Ross and Susan Henderson. He is requesting a variance to reduce the side and rear setbacks from 15 feet to 4 feet to allow for installation of a swimming pool. Parcel number 161, CO2-055. His property is zoned R1. We had letters for and against. We had one letter for and one letter for against. The property is zoned R1. I won't go through these regulations again because it's very similar to what I just told you. Minimum lot size 10,000 square feet. Staff is abstaining from a recommendation of approval or against for this application.
Thank you. Would the applicant or the representative for the applicant like to come to the podium and be recognized? And
yes, ma'am.
The same, we'll give you the same that we talked about before.
Sure.
With the time limit is 5 minutes going to work for this.
I hope that we aren't anywhere near that as we were with the last one. I don't think this will be as complicated as an issue, but are you all ready to hear from us at this point?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm Miles Hendricks. Good evening. Thank you all for hearing us tonight. I represent Gary Strait, who in turn represents the homeowners of the property, Mr. and Ms. Ross and Susan Henderson. He is the contractor that was putting in a pool for the Hendersons. And I will say, too, that neither I nor Gary Strait represent the Hendersons legally, but just in the capacity of handling the application here for them, they are actually represented by legal counsel. I think he is here this afternoon, which I do see him. Yes, sir. And yes, ma'am. So what we're here for today is we're asking for a setback from 15 feet on the side and on the back of this lot, reduced back to 4 feet. And the reason being is there was a pool that was started by Mr. Gary Strait, who is with S&S Pool Company. He thought he was doing everything right, applied for the permits, pool permits, and actually had a shell placed and put in the ground with the sand around it. And city officials from the city of St. Mary's came and reviewed that and actually approved the location of that. And if y'all have the packet in front of you, if you'll turn, and I don't know if y'all do, if y'all don't, please stop me. Turn to the you'll see the plat. It's about 5 pages in or so.
I've got two.
Can I see what you're looking at, Mr.
Wooden roof in. They're not even in the picture. Wooden roof.
It's that one right there, yes, sir.
Okay, I'm just a moment. Just want to make sure all we're looking at the same thing.
Which of the two are we looking at? There's one, they each have a different location for the pool.
Yes, sir. It's the one that is attached to the actual permit approval.
Can I see your picture?
The building, excuse me, the permit site inspection record.
Which, can you show me the map?
Yes, ma'am. So it's the one attached to the inspection record, which is shows it within the setback lines.
7-6.
That's right. 7-6 and 14.
Okay. Thank you.
And so that is where the shell was located whenever that city official came out and inspected on April 5th, 2018, gave approval for that location. Mr. Strait thought he was all clear to go, continued on with his project, poured the concrete for that, got the plumbing in place, got all the everything that is associated with putting a pool in at considerable expense, obviously, past the shell point. And around the time that he was nearing completion, it was the contractor that was associated with building the enclosure for the pool realized that this was within the setback lines, which are supposed to be 15 feet. And so he alerted officials with the city and asked if that was appropriate, and that's when Mr. Strait got the stop work order at that point. Had Mr. Strait been found out from the city official that came April 5th that the shell was placed in an improper location, it would costed $100, $200, a couple hundred bucks to move the shell, move some sand, and put it in a new location. That wouldn't have been a problem. The problem now is that based on relying on the permitting that was approved and the site inspection that was approved by the city, it would take, and it's a little different than what it says in the packet, but it would take close to $26,000 now to move it to a new location. Would create a considerable and extreme hardship for the Hendersons as well as Mr. Strait that just can't afford to do that. Like I said, he would be glad to do that, obviously, if it was back in April at almost no cost, but now at this point, we're past the point of that, and it is a considerable cost. And I will point out, we in our application, we made a note that it would be around $15,000 to move it, but he is, Mr. Strait has informed me that based on further calculations and further research with what would be needed to actually move that and move the piping, move the water, move the concrete associated with that, it is closer to $26,000. I want to address too the surrounding area, which we do actually have multiple neighbors who were in support of approval of this variance application, actual homeowners out there, rather than we did see the letter from the lot next door, which was a vacant lot, but there are other homeowners that are adjacent to this property who are actual homeowners with improvements on their land that want to see this happen. And I will give each of you a copy of the tax assessor's. You can see the GPS, or the view from bird's eye, which shows some of the surrounding neighbors, and you'll see, and I can point out to you since you have it in your hand, about one lot over, closer to the river over here, which is to the west, you will see the same type of pool with the same type of enclosure very close there to the setback lines, if not in the setback lines. And then adjacent to that property, to the south of that property, which is about two lots from where our property is, this property has a tennis court, large gazebo, and has some other improvements to the surrounding property around the house, which are all very close to the property lines. The other thing I'd point out too is that there's a 6-foot privacy fence surrounding this yard that we're talking about here for the Hendersons. And so whatever uses that the setbacks lines have, so that they're not encroaching on their neighbors' adjoining lots and interfering with their use and enjoyment, I think is, you know, that is not an issue with this, because they have a 6-foot privacy fence that, regardless of how close the Henderson's pool is to their the edge of their lot, it's not going to be affecting any of the neighbors in a negative fashion. And in fact, I think it will be improving everyone's value if they see an improvement like a beautiful pool in the backyard. I think everybody would think that that's a good thing. We are asking for 4 feet. You see the 7.6 feet that the pool is from the line, property line, is for the pool, but we're asking for the additional 3.5 feet or so, because that's what we believe that the enclosure would need for the contractor that is going to do the enclosure. So that's the reason for that additional feet that we're asking for there. And if y'all give me 1 second, I'm going to ask Mr. Strait if he has anything else he'd like me to add.
No, it's fine.
Okay, I'm fine. So with that, like I said, I think it's very simple and straightforward. We're asking for the variance. This isn't a situation in which Mr. Strait was knew he was in the wrong, attempted to circumvent the ordinance and circumvent policy and ask for forgiveness later. He was trying to do the right thing all along, asking, pulling permits, asking for the inspection, and hoping he was in the right, and hoping he'd be told if he wasn't so he could fix it when it was made economic and feasibility sense to do so. So at this point, we would ask for y'all to approve this, and I hope that there's others who would be here to support and voice their support for that as well. And we'll be glad to answer any questions, and Mr. Strait will be glad to answer any questions that any of y'all have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll accept public comment. If anybody would like to come up, if you would state your name and your address, and we're going to stick to the 5 minutes.
Sure. Monty Bow, 600 Carrick Drive. We are neighbors of the Hendersons, and I have to put number one, say that they probably are the best neighbors that we've ever had. They've done nothing but continue to improve the property since they purchased it. And then secondly, it seems to me that there were quite a few balls dropped here by quite a few different parties. I would refer you back to section 9.4 of your ordinance, which talks about hardship. And if you go to line 5, it says that request is limited to the extent necessary to alleviate the unnecessary hardship and not as a convenience to the applicant, nor to gain any advantage or interest over similarly zoned properties. This is a one-off, and it's not setting any precedent, but it would be in a considerable hardship to have it corrected at this point, both by the pool builder and the homeowner. We have no issue with this. Like I said, the Hendersons are perfect neighbors, and we want them to enjoy their pool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Oh, that's where we have to.
I know.
We'll hear you both. So.
My name is Clint Scott. I own the property that is the boundary to the south and to the east. My property, if you look at the plat there, comes out. And so the boundaries are on two sides of my property. It's an L-shaped deal. Looking at that house, but when we moved in, it was on the market, it was going to really just go our way, the whole house, the lot, everything else. The Hendersons moved in, automatic change. I witnessed city people out there that I think did, my age a little bit, I'm not sworn into my memory. The memory is I saw two trucks in the driveway. Not only is there a privacy fence, I built a corral fence all around my property when I bought the property. And so I could climb up. In fact, Mr. Henderson and I have a lot of conversations with me up on the corral fence. When I came into my property, I heard noises over there, and I knew that they were out of town. So I climbed up and saw two city inspectors there. This was 2 or 3 months ago. And so I followed this whole process because my house isn't set back that much. We've got 6 acres, but we're in a corner of it. So I hear all this stuff and talk about hardship. Live next door to somebody that's put the pool in. And they went on and on and on, and I think I met the contractor. Everything seemed to be fine. There was no hint that they were doing something wrong. So I stand in favor of granting this, just number one, based on hardship. Number two, it's going to increase my property value because it'll increase the value of every house around there. And I see no problem with granting it. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, did you want to come up?
My name is Charlie Nauer. I live at 613 Carr Court, and I own the property next to Mr. Henderson. I agree he has improved his property, grass and flowers, some of those types. But he hasn't been a good neighbor. And I'm having to get away, but I fairly get along with the guy. When he first moved here, he had a new grass put in, grass covered, come out there and clean it up, cut it up, picked up his branches, stuff like that. And they wound up putting it on my property. So I let him get away with it for a while. But, you know, enough's enough. So I talked to the guys who did the grass cutting. He said, you need to inform him that he can't do that. So he corrected it. Then he has 200 feet of fence on my property and his, 6 feet high. The people that came out to repair his fence and replace it, they took it down. When they cleaned up, they took 2/3 of it away and left the other 1/3 for me. So getting along with this guy, I cleaned it up myself, no problem. So I was talking to Jerry Sizemore, and he was telling about the Hendersons applied for a building permit for the pool. And I talked to, what's the for the planning warning. She said, when he applied for it, we told him he has his 15-foot setback. He agreed. Jerry went out there and inspected, had the 15-foot setback. Of course, this is what Jerry's is. And then he said he got a call from the other guy who's put the pool in. He said, something wrong here. So Jerry went out again and he said, they moved the pool closer to the fence line, which cuts down on the setback. I said, I don't know that. You're going to have to get with Jerry and get his permits and all that stuff to make sense out of who's telling the truth or not. I don't care. Thank you.
So you're in opposition of the variance. Thank you for...
The setbacks and the rules of the city of St. Mary's are good for me and good for him too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Frank Drain. I live at 207 Barkentine Drive. I am a neighbor of the Hendersons, and I am in favor of granting the variance. I'm going to echo what the other ones have said. They've been excellent neighbors. They've improved our property values. I am aware through Clint and the Hendersons, and also through the council, that the city really let the ball drop. Had the opportunity to deny the permit. They granted the permit, but then when it was determined that through the people putting up the screen enclosures, when it was discovered, but to let it get along that long, that far. And if there's ever a case of equitable estoppel, that would be unfair to deny these people the opportunity to continue with the work they performed, increase values in the subdivision when that house was in a depressed condition. It would be one of these. This is the perfect situation. So I'm in favor of the variance.
Thank you. Oh, it, did you have time? So you have just
got one minute left.
He was trying to time. We're trying to count the sand.
Okay. Firstly, let's keep this straight. Frank Drain is not a neighbor of Patterson. He's a neighbor of the subdivision, but not a neighbor. So there's some tricky words here, so pay attention. Thank you. You are neighbors.
Great.
Yeah. I think what's been avoided here is that Charlie is a lot owner. His home is not next to this property. He lives on the other side of the subdivision. All he is a lot owner.
Okay, thank you. Okay, if there's no further public comment, I'd like to...
One more.
No, wait.
When I first come up here, I told you my address and where I live, and I told you and this crowd, I owned a lot next to Henderson. Is that substandard? You understand that? Do you understand English? I don't know.
Okay, we're not gonna.
I
understand, but we're not also gonna have back and forth with the comments. At that note, we're gonna close public comment, and we'll discuss among the board.
Okay, I got some questions.
Okay.
I'm good at questions. Now, one thing I'm gonna show you. And you've seen, I've got two different site plans. And both of them show a hand-sketch pool on the other.
So I'd like to say that the reason why we have that is I was curious what the original building permit plan looked like, and so that was provided to us as well. So I'm not sure if that's in the packet that you have, because it was a subsequent thing that I asked for.
Yes, both of them are in the packet. One of them shows one that was submitted with the current pool contractor, and one was submitted from a previous pool contractor.
Okay, so this is what we're talking about.
Okay.
Which one is the previous
pool contractor?
This was the original, the one that's the smaller, attached to the little patio area was the first one. that was submitted. Here, would
you
like?
Can he come up, Mr. Strait? Come up.
You can take that too.
Mr. Strait's here.
That's what he, I think he's going to ask.
Also, I did a little research on this too. And I know 6 foot fence right because I couldn't see over the fence and I didn't get out the line, but I rode by the property. I also talked to Ms. Sizemore, who signed off on the 3 inspections over there. Ms. Sizemore assured me that we went out there, the fence was originally up, and he measured where the shell was. It was 15 feet, which was required setback. And that's pretty much what this case right here says, shows. That's approximately about 15 feet. It's more than 7.5 feet. Like, it looks like it's, when somebody contacted him, he went back out and took Mr. Sampson with him, as I understand it, and they checked it together. Looked like the ground had been disturbed and like it had been dug and refilled and the shell put in a different location.
Maybe
I can help clear this thing up, okay? The two of these that you have, okay, one is a hand drawing in which I submitted to the city planning people. They asked me where the pool was going to go, and I drew it on this thing, and I gave it to them, and they gave me the permit. Okay, there was no discussions about setbacks or anything. I just said that's where I want to put it, and they signed off, and we started to dig a hole.
There's no measurements on that one.
And in the process, we dug the hole, we built the pool. We got the inspections done. We filled in and backfilled it. We put the liner in. We filled it full of water. I left that particular account. I turned it over to another company. They were going to put in the patio and put in the screened-in enclosure. When they applied for a permit to do the screened-in enclosure, it was determined then that I put the pool in the wrong place. And I freely admit it, I put it in the wrong place, but I didn't realize I was doing it. So that's where we are, pretty much.
Did that answer your question, Wiley?
The items that are approved by the city inspector, those things were done. They were in place when he signed off those initials.
And the pool wasn't moved at any point, you're saying?
Yeah, in the current place.
That was just a shell and the ring around the shell for the ground.
The piping, the ground, and the shell.
Okay, and they're saying they didn't move it from
then.
Back
for a final inspection on the pool.
Right, but at that time, they're saying that it hasn't been moved since then.
When he went and looked at it, he said he measured from the fence to the edge of the pool shell, and it was 15 feet.
No, it's never been 15 feet. It's 14, where it is currently right now. At one end, it's 14.2 inches. At the other end, it's 7.6. That's the way it's always been.
Including when they came and approved the shell, the ground, and the piping.
Mr. Sampson, what did you see?
When I looked, the pool was in place where it's actually at now. Now, we did take pictures where you could actually see in the ground the actual outline of the shell. And it was moved over at that time, approximately, I think it was 7 to 8 feet.
I'm sorry, it's never been moved.
It's never been moved.
Okay, all I can tell you is what I witnessed.
If you're looking at
I can tell you what I saw as far as.
If you're looking at construction
work. Excuse me. No, we're just not going to have a debate or have outbursts. We're going to just listen to everybody with respect. So if you'd like to finish what you were saying.
I cannot, like I said, all I can tell you is what I witnessed. What I took pictures of, I can see in the ground where it appears to be ground disturbance. The way it's shaped in the ground, we can tell whether that's been compact or not compact over the years. I took pictures of that. We measured it. That's all I can tell you. I do not know where the original placement of the pool was. I can't tell you. I swear on an oath that it was moved, not moved. I can just tell you what I witnessed when I was brought up there.
Okay. Thank you. Did you have any more questions?
Can we address that briefly? I think Mr. Strait would like to address that there.
I heard you say that it hasn't been moved.
Right.
Is there a difference?
An explanation about what they may be looking at that they think might be evidence of a moving pool somewhere, somehow.
Okay.
When we dug the hole, we had to find places to put the dirt. And we put dirt on the right-hand side, and we put dirt on the left-hand side. And then when we backfilled it, we took the dirt back and put it in the hole.
Okay.
So what you're looking at is construction, not debris, but excess dirt that looks like maybe we did something, but it's just dirt. We didn't move that pool. Once that pool went in, it was there.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any further questions while he's standing up here?
Yes, I do. So the survey here, was this survey ordered for the specific purpose of placing the pool?
Because it's a recent survey. That survey was ordered in February because there was never a survey on the house done, and the city would not issue a permit because there was no site approval or site plan on file. So we went out and got a survey, the first ever survey on that piece of property. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're looking at there.
Okay, so you had a survey done. Did anyone go out there and stake the corners of the pool to make sure you were in compliance with the setback?
No.
And you have...
I wasn't aware of the setback, to be honest with you.
Okay, because
this is the first time I've built a pool in St. Mary's. The first time I've had any dealings with the city planning department in this whole process. So I screwed up. I should have known, but I didn't. And I'm just saying, it's in the ground. We'd like to get it approved.
So I'm just throwing this question out because it's in my mind. When the city goes out to inspect it, what were the reference points they looked at? I mean, and so when you went to set your corners, you tell me you had no corners to set because you weren't aware of any side setback restrictions on the property.
The shell was in place when they went and looked at it. But
someone had to set the shell to begin with first. Then when they looked at it, we're talking a difference of. It's 100% difference. I mean, that corner's at 7.5 feet. The setback is 15 feet, so it's easily visible that it's not within compliance. Not just for you, because you're saying you weren't aware of that side setback stipulation. But where was the city on this?
City
in terms of,
said he measured from the fence to the corner shell. It was 15 feet. He assured me of that.
I'm sorry, at the reference, what you're talking about, was the shell in the ground when he measured, or was it sitting on top?
It's when he went and did his inspection of the shell, was signed off on it right here.
But your understanding is that what he was relaying to you was that it was placed in the ground at that time? Do you know
that's
the answer to that?
That's not he said he inspected right here on this sheet. The initial that they gave the dates. The shell, okay, 4/5/18.
Can I speak real quick? Yeah. I'm Remington East. I represent legally the Hendersons, and I think they can provide some enlightenment on with regards to what you're asking about with this pool movement thing.
Oh, you know, I guess I'm a little confused. Are you answering the questions, or are you coming up to comment?
I'd like to clarify what he's talking
okay,
about.
Thank you.
My name is Susan Henderson.
Ross Henderson.
And we own the property that's in question.
Yes, ma'am.
We were there the day the guy came from the city to do the inspection,
the
which was
inspection.
April 5th.
But there
he signed off on three things on that day.
Right.
He came through the gate, never rang the doorbell
or
anything.
Never measured.
Never took a tape measure out or anything.
He went out and talked to him. Because he was there at 7:30.
He was there at 7:30 in the morning.
And I went out and talked to him, and he wanted to know where the paperwork is. And I told him where it was. He got it, went through the whole thing, said it looked good, looked at the pipes and stuff or whatever.
And it was cemented and everything at that time.
He never measured that pool that day.
Nobody ever said anything about setbacks or measurements at all.
No.
Never. Gary marked where the pool was going. We never had anything to say about it. We never had anything to do with the permit. But when the guy came to do the inspection, we were there at 7:30 in the morning.
We were in our kitchen. He was right there where you are.
The pole is there with a, there was a plastic Ziploc bag that the permit was in, and he signed off, asked him if he was okay with it, and he said, fine. No tape measure was ever taken.
Never.
No pictures were ever taken. The only pictures that were taken by that gentleman right there, who came weeks later to take pictures.
And it was in the same spot.
It was in the same spot. That pool was never moved.
On April 5th, it was the same
spot.
Where
it was, they had a 5-foot dig around the pool.
And I've got pictures of the whole thing. They never moved that pool.
Okay. Thank you for answering the question. Okay. Any more questions while they're up here? I'm sorry, that we may have a question for you. I'm sorry.
Do you not for
you. Not for you, I'm sorry. Okay. I was going to stop them before they sat down. So I'd like to thank the neighbors who came to talk tonight, because this is certainly a complex situation, as we can see the going back and forth. And so in my mind, I just want to pull it back from some of the energy that's going up here and look at it from, like Monty had brought up, the hardship aspect that we're looking at for this variance and what it is we're talking about. We're talking about a pool that has the characteristic of the R1 neighborhood that it's in. It's, for the most part, a majority supported by folks around that it could affect. And it has a 6-foot privacy fence around it as well. So I wanted to bring that out because it seems like we're getting kind of, it's getting away from us a little bit.
And I'd like to state that the owners, you folks have not done anything wrong. Hopefully we all up here understand that. So it's trying to get to the root of the problem. But from my point of view, personally, it's how do we, one of my pet peeves up here is people do not use, on a $50,000 project, you could have the corner surveyed for about $150 to $200. To me, that seems a reasonable use of funds to avoid tying up our city attorney and various other attorneys in the area for something that could be easily solved. So that's going to be one of my pet peeves from here on out in that regard. I think we're dealing with two issues. One, the failure of the contractor to look at what the variances are and verify that they're indeed being supported and not getting a survey. And as near as I can see, the city failed to do what they need to do in terms of saying, whoa, time out, something is off here. The third party involvement, the owners, I can see no culpability. It's unfortunate you folks are having to be here. But so to kind of echo Carrie, yeah, it's a confusing situation. My bias is I if we do building projects in the city of St. Mary's, we need better documentation than just this. This is not sufficient documentation.
Just a point of information on the application for the permit for the pool. There's nothing that says how many feet from here, how many feet from there. There's nothing on your permit.
A license.
Any measure.
Had a survey been done to stake the corner points of the projected pool, the surveyor, a licensed surveyor, would have noted and referenced setbacks, recorded setbacks for that subdivision. So that's something that it all could have been avoided, and I've seen it elsewhere. So it's just, for me, it's an issue in that regard. So
but it's one that's passed, and that it already, we're here now, is my point, though. So
yeah, we can't,
considering where we are now.
Unwind it, yeah.
Wyler, did you have any more discussion? Or Lloyd, I'm sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
No.
I'll go back to one of my first questions. I got two site plans here. This is the first one, this is the second one. Why was two different ones? And why was the first one used the first time? And why was the pool put where the first one chose?
So he did speak to that he, if you, should it be
May
better?
May I respond?
Okay, sure.
The one, you have one which was on the original application.
Right.
Okay, the second one is what I actually did. That's why you have two.
Well, the first one has pool coming up on the brick patio.
Why the first one chose?
Why? Why what?
Why was it a place where the first one chose?
Because I was dumb. I made a mistake. I admit it.
Okay, I got a little question.
Okay, are we ready for to accept a motion on whether to accept the application?
I move to accept.
You move to accept? I'll second it.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that concludes our agenda tonight. I'd accept a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Doctor.
All in favor? Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay. After action review?
You know, you got a little loose about that. You need to get to the
Then don't. I wish you wouldn't. It's easier on me.
It hasn't been changed. At the very end of it, it says that the city approves a permit in error.